we need to see what is happening in the market, what the consumer wants, what the consumer needs. And we could see right now that there is a change in terms of how we are feeding dogs and cats. You know, we've been going from the, and I can just refer to the traditional using kibble, you know, and wet products, to now we have seen other formats. We're talking about, you know, freeze dry, air dry, slow cook, gently cook, and then you have fresh and raw. So all this is to satisfy a need for the consumer.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai. AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Chemin Pet Food and Rendering is dedicated to supporting longer, fuller pet lives. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition, we partner with a purpose.
Hello and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Jan Sugodolski and I'm dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the pet food science industry. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. And today I'm very honored to our guest today is Dr. Juan Gomez-Bazauri. He's a founder and president of Magellan, a company that, which is dedicated to the development of science-based technologies and innovations. Welcome, Juan.
Thanks, Jan. It's a pleasure and an honor to be a guest at this podcast. I've been following your work for several years, and I'm really glad to and happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's great. So we're going to talk a lot of gut health today. So Juan, I know that you have a very long experience in the area of gut health, you know, food science and so on. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're coming from, what was your background, education, you know, your whole career path, and how did you end up now with your own company?
Yeah. Well, so it depends how many minutes or hours we have, but I'll try to summarize it.
We have plenty of
time. I'm originally from Lima, Peru. I was born and raised there, did my primary, secondary, and my university degree. I have an engineering degree, but then I got into the food, nutrition things had always been my interest. I went to England, sponsored by the British Council, did a master's in food science, came back to Peru, worked for a little bit, but, you know, the bug of further education and further knowledge was with me. So I pursued a PhD in food science, biochemistry, nutrition at Cornell. And shortly after I finished, did a postdoc at Cornell. Went to work for Ralston Purina. They sent me back to Peru. I worked there on the R&D department, doing different things, but more on the livestock side, you know, monogastrics, dairy, swine, poultry. Poultry is big in South America. And at the time, the founder of Alltech was visiting with me. So we established a good connection. And at some point, I was just coming back, and he said, "Well, are you coming back? Why don't you come and work with me?" And the rest was kind of history, because I stayed with Alltech for almost 25 years. But different positions, several different things, all, you know, commercial, technical, new ventures. And after 25, 27 years, it was just time for me to see other pastures and, you know, talk to the family. We all agreed. And and then I decided to open my own business. So that's one of the things. I mean, I've always had curiosity to do several things. And even when I was at college doing my PhD, nutrition had a big draw and emphasis for me, because I was looking into the link between nutrition and health and the impact that nutrition had in certain, you know, immunity and things. Like, how can we do that? And that's kind of what I've been pursuing all this year. And this is what I'm doing at my own business right now. I work with several customers, you know, advising in terms of how to develop new technologies that have an impact on health, and at the same time, companies that want to work in the pet food industry but don't know how to position things, then that's also part of my help. Because it is interesting, and you've probably been following the industry for several years as well, but there is this kind of belief that, oh, you know, we do this in the food industry, and then we can do that in the same thing in the pet food, and then we can make all these different claims, but the reality is different. You know, I believe and I think, you know, the regulations on pet food are even stricter than will be for human side.
Can you give us a few examples, maybe, or one or two examples that you in your career encountered?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's different things you talked about. For instance, you know, different algae sources, you know, and you can actually go and buy algae and use it in the human side. But some of these things, you know, have to go to a scrutiny, and you have to prove, number one, safety and efficacy. Then you have, you know, the different things related to, I mean, I've been on the yeast and fermentation side for several years, and there's several compounds that can be obtained from yeast, from the fermentation process. But then you can use those in the human side on supplements. And nowadays, perhaps you can use them on pet food supplements as well. But if you want to get into kind of the mainstream, it's a little bit different. So that's kind of in a nutshell what I did, what I was doing, and kind of where I'm going now, Jen. So it's an exciting times, I think, because there's so many different things happening, and the way that technology is evolving is going at a very, very high pace. And sometimes, you know, we're trying to catch up with that, because if we don't, then we're gonna left behind.
We're gonna afterwards. You mentioned that your major interest nowadays is longevity, so we're gonna talk about this. But before, I wanna actually still pick your brain a little bit about changes, all your experiences over 25 years. So what are the big changes that you see that happened like over the last 25 years? You mentioned technology, right? In what do you exactly mean with technology? How is it going to change the pet foods industry?
Some of the things that are happening right now, and probably is one of the buzzwords, is in terms of AI, you know, artificial intelligence. And, you know, a number of people are concerned either for good or for bad. You know, people are talking, this is going to be replacing my job and what I'm going to be doing. On the other hand, is you're going to be using these technology as a way to improve and maximize your work and your efficiency. In a sense, I call this, and I was talking to a friend yesterday, a couple of days ago, and what I see, Jan, this is a revolution. You know, in the past, we had the Industrial Revolution, and that changed a lot of things, you know, migration from farmers to the cities looking for jobs, you know, the line workers and all that, and the Green Revolution. So every advance in technology creates changes, but then allows for society to make a bigger leap. And I think this is kind of what we're doing right now. This is what's happening at this time.
So how do you see AI, you know, improving, or how do you see AI changing the pet food industry?
Well, one of the things is it will allow us to do things in a much faster way. So things that could take us probably maybe a year or so to develop, we can actually input some parameters into a model, and the model will tell us, you know, what the result is. It will give us at least a glimpse of what it is. So what I'm saying is, it's not going to be, okay, we put in this and then we get the answer, but it all depends on what we're going to be putting in, what questions or what parameters we're going to put in into the system, so to get a good answer, you know.
So is it about the ingredients to some degree, or how they interact? So
yeah, ingredients, you know, the combination of different ingredients, how they work together. But and this actually will allow us to tailor diets as well. And that's another area that I'm looking into, which I see a lot of opportunities on what we call the personalization of nutrition. So I think right now we are we're about to cross a chasm, but we have the tools now that can allow us to do this. I mean, still, I don't think this is going to be happening tomorrow, but we are there. And there is a lot of interest, particularly as dogs, cats, and humans will start living longer. So we're looking for ways on how we can maximize that state.
No, absolutely. But just I want to maybe come back to this term personalized. It's kind of a buzzword, right?
What
do you practically see personalized? On which level could you see something that happened maybe in 2 years or maybe in 10 years? What do you mean with personalized? Because probably everybody has a little bit of a different, you know, level of what personalized means. So how do you see the future?
Right. And this is sort of resonating with the consumer. So what happens is, you know, we need to see what is happening in the market, what the consumer wants, what the consumer needs. And we could see right now that there is a change in terms of how we are feeding dogs and cats. You know, we've been going from and I can just refer to the traditional using kibble, you know, and wet products, to now we have seen other formats. We're talking about, you know, freeze dry, air dry, slow cook, gently cook, and then you have fresh and raw. So all this is to satisfy a need for the consumer, what they want. Because now the term, which I think is overused, the humanization of the pet industry, we're looking at dogs and cats as part of a family. But I look at it more as a way on how these companion animals can help us live better, longer life. Because if we do something better for them that we can find that is useful, it'll apply to us. Now, going back to your question, how do I see personalization? You know, I can call you and say, you give me the dog of your name, how old it is, what it does, and then I can put together a package of food, and then I put a label with the name of your dog. And some people will call that personalization. Another step than that is I can, we could provide all that plus, you know, a regime of how we need to feed the dog or the cats in terms of calories. You know, these are the amount of calories, it's all portion, it's all size, and this is what you need to give. So the industry has been playing with that for a number of years too, and particularly also on the veterinary side, some therapeutical diets as well, you know, portion control and all that stuff. But now what I'm talking about personalization, Jan, is the fact that we can actually understand what you need, what your dog or your cat needs, and then we will provide the nutrients that dog actually needs for that. And the same thing happens for humans. Now, one of the things that we need to take into account is everybody is different. So there's some generalization, but there's some uniqueness as well. And this is what I'm going at when I talk about personalization. We need to feed to your uniqueness. And basically, you know, as was Hippocrates said many years ago, food be your medicine or food be thy medicine. So that's kind of the approach that I'm taking. Well, thinking in this case anyways.
No, absolutely. So where do you see the field going in when it comes to also maintaining health, right? So longevity is obviously a very important topic for owners, for our own vision. So where do you think, where are we going there? What strides did we make?
So one of the things, and you and I probably have discussed about before, and even when I was with my previous organization, you know, in terms of the impact of the microbiome, you know, what is the microbiome and how does the microbiome impact health? And, you know, and then there's different microbiomes. The most important one we could say will be the gut microbiome, you know, all the bacteria, the viruses, the fungus that live on that, you know, all their genetic makeup and how we can maximize that efficiency. I mean, you've done a lot of work on this, you know, particularly with, you know, chronic enteropathy, you know, you've created a dysbiosis system. But we can use all that information, you know, because that's the beauty of this. And then this is where I tie the artificial intelligence, you know, use all the information that is available. And instead of scanning it for, you know, months or things, you know, when I did my PhD, this is what I had to do, you know, revise all the literature and spend countless nights. But you can do that in a short time. And then with that information, you can actually put together a plan for what you need. But I think the key thing on longevity is the intervention. You know, right now, you know, people are talking about longevity, particularly the boomer generation. But we don't know that boomer generation, you know, their starting point, how they were fed in their early years. Similarly, with dogs, is how are they feeding in those early years? You know, when it's a puppy, when it's a kitten, if it's a dog that has been rescued. So we can provide different things, but the microbiome can give us a lot of information on that. And that's where I see this personalization going.
So when you talk about early life events and feeding, what are the areas we have to watch for?
We need to, well, and then even in early life, we can go back, you know, because it's not the newborn, but it's also what the newborn had when it was at the mother's level. You know, if it was on during pregnancy and lactation and all those things. So it's that. But then again, it is providing the right nutrition. What is the plan of nutrition that we need to provide? And you know, and I can draw back to when I was working for Rostam Purina on the livestock side. You know, and Rostam Purina was very good in providing the starter diets, what we call it, and when I work with farmers in South America, you know, they will be using, you know, a Purina starter feed because they knew that that feed will deliver all the nutrients necessary for that animal, being a broiler chicken or being a piglet, to grow. And then they either continue with the Purina system or they will try to you know, minimize costs and things. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that the nutrition at the starting phase is key for that. Now, throughout the life stages, there are particularly points of intervention. And I was just listening to in a meeting a couple of days ago that on the human side, there are particular points of intervention which are like when you are turning around, 40 and then turning around 60 or 65. So kind of these are those the key stages. So I need to look into that a little bit more detail and what is causing that. But similarly, if we apply that to cats and dogs, there's probably stages that we can intervene nutritionally, but nutritionally in order to prevent and maximize efficiency. Now, if we're talking about disease states, that's something else.
Absolutely. I think I know that a lot of companies are working, or companies or researchers working on this so-called biological clock, right? Like a biological clock. So do you have any insights in this area and how can it help us?
Yeah, this is an interesting concept. And actually, I did a couple of presentations last year. I was doing several presentations, and one of the areas was about turning back the clock. That's I think how I position it. But that had to do with the mitochondria, and there is a lot of information out there. Some probably good, maybe some other that has been puffed up, but. But definitely, the mitochondria is the engine of the cell. And on the longevity side, what we need to try to address is to prevent the degeneration or denaturation of those cells. But we need to go into what is the function of the mitochondria, because if the mitochondria begins to break down or it doesn't work, then that cell naturally is going to be dying. So turning the biological clock is, in my opinion, is providing the necessary maintenance to that engine. And how can we do that? Again, this ties back to the gut microbiome and, what those bacteria present in the microbiome produces. And this brings us to the metabolize, or nowadays called postbiotics, which is another buzzword that is used quite a bit, because these metabolites or certain metabolites act as neurotransmitters, which then will provide chain of information to the mitochondria and ask the mitochondria to behave properly. So that's my take on this biological clock. I don't think we can turn it back, but we can probably slow it down.
I remember, maybe you familiar with it. I remember 10, 15 years ago, some companies, or at least one big company, worked on calorie restriction, kind of like a mimicking, right? Do you remember that? And is this something that is still on the table, or is it nobody's working in this area anymore?
Still doing that, and I know that that was done with dogs. I think they pursued it for pretty much their life, and I think at the end. This was mostly with caloric restriction, and then at the end it was determined that there was an extension of life of 2 years compared to the...
There was the Purina longevity study, but I'm referring to... There was a huge buzz a few years ago about some, I won't say chemicals, some compounds that kind of mimic, because, mimic kind of this caloric restriction, and then... theoretically would slow down also a little bit aging.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if somebody's still working in this area.
Yeah. I don't recall that, but what I know, there is something happening right now. There's another term that people are talking about is the biohackers, which you probably have heard. People are biohack your system, basically taking things that are going to be promoting life extension. One of those compounds right now is rapamycin, which has been used and has been proven to do some. I think it's used when people has been used when people have organ transplant to avoid rejection and maximize efficiency of the organ. But now I think there has been some other results that show that can also help and extend lifespan. Similarly with, I think there's another compound, metmorphine. I don't know if you are familiar with that, which is, I think it's used, some of these things that are related to insulin control, sugar control, which again is if you're, you know, slowing down or reducing these kind of diseases, you can probably extend lifespan.
So, but probably to summarize, it's not going to be a simple approach, right? It's going to be a multimodal approach to that.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens is, again, you know, as the societies evolve, you are always looking for that silver bullet or that compound, and then on the human side, and then we probably extend this to our companion animals, we just go to the doctor and say, well, give me something that is going to take care of this. Or you take your dog and say, give me something for my dog that is going to do this. But that approach, I mean, could work for, you know, certain time, but the overall thing is not being taken care of. And so the approach for nutrition, for health, needs to be more holistic. This reminds me, you know, about, I don't know, this was 20-some years ago, the founder of the company I work with and I, we were on tour, and then we were giving different lectures. And one of the topics I was talking was about nutrition, longevity. And my approach was, you know, there's three things that are important. You know, number one is what is your genetic makeup. Number two, what kind of diet you have. And number three is what kind of environment, lifestyle you have. So to me, back then, those three things were important. You know, fast forward 25, 30 years, and it's the same thing. People are talking about the same thing. But the difference is that back then, we didn't have AI. We didn't have the tools that we have now. So we're still looking into these three aspects. You know, what is your genetic makeup? Can we change that? Maybe we will be able to in the future. But probably not now, but we can, through diet, we can, you know, turn on or turn off of certain genes. Through your lifestyle will be, you know, it's what you do, the friends that you have, the happiness that you have, and your environment is, you know, it's basically what surrounds us. It's, you know, again, you know, it's, the soil that we work, the soil that we walk, the streets that we walk, wherever we are. So we are surrounded by a whole environment, and there may be some compounds that are toxic to our system. And that also will have an impact on our microbiome. So we need to look at all these like a holistic approach.
It's time for our famous three.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try dietforge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So we're almost at the end of our episode. So maybe just not really a tricky question, but diet, obviously, you mentioned diet is a major part of health and longevity. what's the best thing we can do now? Recommend what kind of what which part of the diet would you optimize to the best of your knowledge that we?
One of the things is, and this is one of the areas that I'm focusing is I'm focusing on the macro ingredients on protein, fiber, and to certain point the fats, because these are the major components of not only of our diet but also the components of food for companion animals. So fiber definitely has an impact. Both protein and fiber have an impact on microbiome. So we're talking about postbiotics earlier. We're talking about short-chain fatty acids, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can actually produce these short-chain fatty acids from proteins, but also you can produce it from fiber. So definitely fiber is the best part. But it all depends, again, how you put all those things together. So in terms of a diet, you know, we're talking about diverse diet, and that's another thing too that maybe moving into companion animals, you know, introduce diverse ingredients because you want to foster diversity of the microbiome. But not only diversity, but diverse functionality, because, you know, as you well know, there's, you know, trillions of bacteria, and we need to determine which are the bacteria that we need to facilitate to continue growing. Kind of a thought in here is I was just reading something about the what's it called? The black queen hypothesis for the microbiome. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but basically it kind of refers to this card game. It's called Hearts, but there are certain bacteria that loses certain genes to maximize efficiency, to maximize their living. But then some other bacteria that takes that upon themselves to continue working. So that's the functionality that needs to exist in the microbiome is, and how are we going to feed to do that? Because it's everybody's working in there. You know, we don't see it, but everybody has a role. You know, somebody produces some metabolites, some bacteria produces some waste, which then can be used by another bacteria. And I mean, it's an exciting field. I mean, and you probably see this day in and day out, but it's amazing.
So ultimately, substrate is one of the most important thing for bacteria and for what? Great. So that brings me actually to my very final question. Is a little bit, you know, outside, but you mentioned, what is your favorite book? So you mentioned this one book. Is there another one you recommend?
I read a lot of books, and actually, it's a friend of mine. I'm not promoting this, but a friend of mine just gave me this. I don't know if you're able to see Outlive,
yeah.
But Peter Attia, talking about, you know, maximizing longevity and things. I think he was also I'm reading this, and then another friend of mine gave me a book called How to Run, something about how to run until you're 100 years old. So. Oh.
So I think that's one other part that we didn't really discuss, exercise, right?
It's an important part. That's that activity. And again, you know, it's, again, you know, we talking about dogs, right? And then the dogs have been, it will be interesting to see how much activity our dogs have, you know, because, you know, we go to work and then come back, and then the dog is spending most of the day just sitting on the couch. But that's another important aspect. So
thank you so much, Dr. Juan Gomez-Bazauri.
Okay.
So that concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast, presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And until next time, this is Jan Sokodolski from the Pet Food Science Podcast signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent with Appa Time Zone Hassle. delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.